Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Gidivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Gidivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Prabhupada ki Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Jai Gaur Premanandi. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Hare Krishna. So first of all, I'd like to begin by saying it's a great pleasure to be here with all of you Vaishnavas. And I hope that by your mercy I can say something of some benefit. Today, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, 17th chapter, text number 22. Rajovacha,
Rajovacha,
Dharmam Bhavishi Dharmagya,
Dharmam Bhavishi Dharmagya,
Dharmosi Vrisharupadrik,
Dharmosi Vrisharupadrik,
Yada Dharma Kitasthanam, Sukachasyapi tad bhavet. Rajovacha.
Rajovacha.
Dharmam bhavishi dharmagya.
Dharmam bhavishi dharmagya.
Dharmosi visharupadrik.
Dharmosi visharupadrik.
Yada dharma kritasthanam. Sukachasyapi tad bhavet. Rajovacha Dharma Bhavishi Dharmagya Dharmosi Vrisharupadik
Yadharma
Vitasthanam Suchakasya Vitad Bhavet Rajovacha dhammam bhavishi dhammagya dhammasi krishna drupake yada dhamma kita sthanam sujakasya pidhamavit raja vacha dhammam bhavishi dhammagya dhammasi visharupadik yada dhamma kita sthanam sujakasya pitad bhavet raja uvacha. The king said, dharmam, religion, bravishi, as you speak, dharmagya, O one who knows the codes of religion, dharma, the personality of religion. Asi, you are. Risharupadhik, in the disguise of a bull. Yet, whatever. Adharmakita, one who acts irreligiously. Stanam, place. Suchakasya, of the identifier. Api, also. Tat, that. Bhavet, becomes. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The king said, O you who are in the form of a bull, you know the truth of religion, and you are speaking according to the principle that the destination intended for the perpetrator of irreligious acts is also intended for one who identifies the perpetrator. You are no other than the personality of religion. So everyone can please repeat. The king said, O you who are in the form of a bull, you know the truth of religion. And you are speaking according to the principle that the destination intended for the perpetrator of irreligious acts is also intended for one who identifies the perpetrator. You are no other than the personality of religion. Purport. A devotee's conclusion is that no one is directly responsible for being a benefactor or mischief monger without the sanction of the Lord. Therefore, he does not consider anyone to be directly responsible for such action. But in both cases, he takes it for granted that either benefit or loss is God sent, and thus it is His grace. In case of the benefit, no one will deny that it is God sent. But in the case of loss or reverses, one becomes doubtful about how the Lord could be so unkind to His devotee as to put him in great difficulty. Jesus Christ was seemingly put into such great difficulty, being crucified by the ignorant. But he was never angry at the mischief mongers. That is the way of accepting a thing, either favorable or unfavorable. Thus, for a devotee, the identifier is equally a sinner, like the mischief monger. By God's grace, the devotee tolerates all reverses. Maharaj Pariksit observed this, and therefore he could understand that the bull was no other than the personality of religion himself. In other words, a devotee has no suffering at all, because so-called suffering is also God's grace for a devotee who sees God in everything. The cow and Bull never placed any complaint before the king for being tortured by the personality of Kali, although everyone lodges such complaints before the state authorities. The extraordinary behavior of the bull made the king conclude that the bull was certainly the personality of religion, for no one else could understand the finer intricacies of the codes of religion. Omagyan Tibrandasya Ganam Gana Sharakaya Chakshurum Militam Minatas Mai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakata Ayam Darati Shva Patantikam Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Siyadvaita Garadha Shibashari Gaudavaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So today being a festival day for the folks in this country, we're departing a little bit from the normal procedure. Anyway, sometimes it's good. Just think, in Ayurveda they say that if you avoid something totally, then you become allergic to it. So every once in a while a little change is good. Not too much. Srila Prabhupada said, the problem with you Americans is you're always changing. So we don't want to become addicted to change. So today, I was just thinking on the way here, today in this country is Thanksgiving. So of course for a devotee, every day is Thanksgiving, you know, for a devotee. Because every day we're so grateful that Krishna is giving us this opportunity. Just like one time Srila Prabhupada was praying to the deities, you know, and so, you know, one devotee noticed, he was like, you know, most of us stand there, we chant the, you know, Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami standard prayers, but Srila Prabhupada was actually, his lips were moving a little bit, so the devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, what are you praying? And Srila Prabhupada said, I'm praying that I won't fall down, you know. Of course, that's not possible for Srila Prabhupada. But the point is that a devotee is very grateful just for the opportunity to wake up and be allowed to perform devotional service. So we have so much to be thankful for. And so every day is Thanksgiving, every day is Jamastami, every day is a festival, every day is a feast, you know. Because devotees are meant to be happy. You know. Actually, I always tell the devotees that this is the first priority principle in preaching, that one must be happy. Because you can say so many things philosophically. You know. Throughout the ages, starting with India, of course, the Western academic structure doesn't start with India, they start with the Greeks. But, you know, we start with India. And we stop with India, but in India, Greece, Romans, Europeans, so many philosophers with so many brilliant ideas, but yet no one follows them. You know, they think it's very nice and we can discuss it, but no one can follow it because there's no practical realization. So the practical realization in Krishna consciousness, the thing that really will change people's hearts is if they see a devotee is happy. Because we do many things that they don't do. You know. And we apparently require, you know, I mean, we try to present Krishna consciousness in a very palatable way, but ultimately we have many habits that wouldn't be so palatable for the majority of the people because of their addictions to different material conditions. So, but if we're happy, then no matter what it is, no matter what you have to go through, you know, just like people who want money, as long as they see that this person did this and got money, they'll do it. And so whatever you want, and everybody wants to be happy. Some people want money, some people don't want money, some people want this. But a devotee, if they're happy in Krishna consciousness, then everyone will be convinced, because that's what everybody wants. So anyway, just a little reflection on being Thanksgiving. So I also thought, when I was thinking about today being Thanksgiving, that this verse is an appropriate verse to celebrate the special quality of thanksgiving of a devotee. Because, generally speaking, this day, of course, a lot of things that this day would celebrate, one wouldn't be very thankful for, like slaughtering hundreds of thousands of Indians, and that was kind of related to this day. But, you know, bounty. The idea was to be bountiful, to receive so many, you know, this was the land of bounty. They found so many natural vegetables and fruits, of course, turkeys also. But we like to see turkeys running around, also happy, you know. But anyway, the point is bounty. So generally speaking, on the material platform, no, they're very thankful for bounty, for having so many things. Everything's very nice, everything's very wonderful, everything is very material prosperity. But they're not so thankful for difficulty. No. Very few people are thankful for difficulty. Although that gratitude is actually instilled in, just like sometimes my brother-in-law used to compose country and western music, and so he would always show me his songs, and I always noticed that in that type of music, and many types of music, the love songs, they're always accompanied with separation from the lover, you know. And that makes, just like in Krishna consciousness, the perverted reflection, that the separation makes the union more relishable. So this principle of, you know, there being a necessity of certain types of going through certain types of difficulty, separation, sadness, lamentation, this duality, it's a duality in the material world which we try to avoid. Otherwise, we try to avoid the difficult part of it to attain the relishable part. But it's always there. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says many, many different times that this principle comes from the original principle that separation brings greater happiness upon union, that being deprived of something makes having it more relishable. And that's the ongoing principle with Krishna and his devotees. Krishna and the gopis, just like when Krishna is, when the daytime comes, you know, then it's stated that the moon curses the sun, because now I will have to go away and let the sun entertain Krishna. And of course, this is in Goloka Vrindavan. And when the nighttime comes, then the sun curses the moon. And now I have to give you, you know, I have to step aside and give you the platform where you can entertain Krishna. And the same, the gopis, when daytime comes, they think, oh, now I have to be separated from Krishna for so long. And when the nighttime comes, then the cowherd boys, you know, Mother Yashoda, of course, Mother Yashoda, at least she can see Krishna there. Of course, Krishna arranges that they always sleep very soundly so that he can leave, you know, in the nighttime. Of course, the gopis win, because ultimately, even in the daytime, Krishna goes and sees them, especially Srimati Radharani, where in the nighttime, cowherd boys, they don't get that opportunity. But anyway, the point is that these opposing elements are always there. But in Krishna consciousness, they're equally, as this verse emphasizes, they're equally relishable. And therefore, when one becomes a matured devotee, their thanksgiving is celebrated in the way that Srila Prabhupada states here. In loss or gain, they're equally happy. Just like in one verse, Srila Prabhupada explains this principle very beautifully. In one verse from Bhagavad Gita, 2:56, Dukesh Vanudrignamana Sukeshu Bhigitas Priyaha Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha Stitadir Muni Uchate. That is Stitadir Muni, the real Muni. The Prabhupada said there's two types of Munis, Stitadir Muni or a devotee. And the other type of Muni is described in the Mahabharata, Nasavrishir Yasyamatam Nabinam. That they are, their idea is that I must create, put together, take from different types of philosophies, different ideas, and create the greatest philosophy. And that makes me a Muni. If I can put together from, you know, call from different areas, different people, different ideas, and this is something we see nowadays, especially philosophy nowadays. People try to take things, even the idea of yoga, you know, you take a little from here, a little from there, and put it all together. Now I have this type of yoga. Now we have this type of yoga. Now in our yoga school we have bhakti, but we have this and we have that. Sometimes we go to yoga schools and we like bhakti, you know, but the real thing is whatever they want to present. This is the real thing. So the real Muni is not like that. The real Muni, the devotee, accepts Krishna's will. You know? And that way, they can conquer all these things. Vitaraga bhaya krodha. You know? They can conquer the frustration, different frustrations that may happen in life. They can conquer anger. They can conquer attachment. You know? Whereas other Munis, other great philosophers, will be attached to my way of thinking, my conception, my idea. But a devotee is not attached to such a thing. No. A devotee is attached to Krishna's idea. And this is the principle of the 26 qualities of a devotee. This principle of surrender is called the Swarup Lakshana, the essential principle. The other 25, they may be there. Of course, in a perfect devotee like Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, any devotee who reaches this highest level of Mahabhagavata, then all those qualities will be present. But even Rupa Goswami says in Upadeshamrita that some principles, otherwise there may be faults in the body of a devotee, and even in some commentaries on that particular verse, there may be faults that are intrinsically there in the nature of a certain devotee, even as they come to perfection. You know? Otherwise, they may be a little harsh, or they may be a little dry, or they may be something that doesn't quite imbibe all of those 26 qualities. But still, one should not find fault in them. One should see that the main characteristic of surrender, you know, of wanting to please Krishna, of wanting to satisfy Krishna, that is the basic principle of surrender. And some of the other qualities are closely related. Humility. In order to surrender, there must be humility. You know? And in order to surrender to the Lord's will, just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's will, who's here and here, his will is that we should give Krishna consciousness to everyone. You know? So that requires compassion, magnanimity. And so all the 26 qualities ultimately are all intertwined and necessary. But the point here is that, first of all, well, there's a famous verse in the Bhagavatam, Tate nukam bam susamikshamana bhunjana evatmakritam dipakam, that a devotee, in order to be able to do what Srila Prabhupada mentions here in this particular purport, to be able to accept the difficulties in life, you know, as well as the pleasant conditions of life. Of course, there's a specific way to accept them. The difficulties we accept, as Srila Prabhupada explains in Bhagavad Gita purport, difficulties we accept by saying, I deserved so much more difficulty, suffering. But, no, Krishna is only giving me this tiny, tiny little sample. And actually, when I have a favorable condition, I don't deserve this. But Krishna is so merciful that he's encouraging me. He's giving me the facility that I can increase my service. Because I may not, just on its own accord, I may not be able to accept all the aspects of difficulties or problems in devotional service. So Krishna gives me these facilities, these material facilities, some money, some intelligence, some ability to deal with circumstances, psychological stability, so that I can be prosperous in Krishna consciousness. So whenever there is prosperity for a devotee, then they increase, they can do more externally. And whenever there's difficulty for a devotee, then they can do more internally. Otherwise, when difficulties come, then we can work on our, we can understand, okay, I have to develop some more qualities to be able to deal with these situations. Krishna has sent this situation so I can develop these qualities. And whenever there's prosperity, not that, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that sometimes a very neophyte devotee will think, Krishna is giving me this prosperity because I did many sacrifices, and now he wants me to enjoy. He wants to reward me. No. It's great. I was a brahmachari or brahmacharini, or spent some years in the ashram. So many difficulties. Now Krishna is so nice. He's giving me this money, and now I can enjoy life, make up for all that difficulty. And so I'm extreme. He's so merciful. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, this is the greatest danger in Krishna consciousness. The greatest danger for a progressing devotee on the neophyte stage is that. And the greatest danger for the most advanced devotee is that, when somebody's very advanced, generally speaking, people start to follow them and kind of glorify them. And after that, then they start thinking, wow, maybe they're right. I must be an advanced soul. So therefore, that's what I am. I'm a Mahabhagavata. And then they fall down. So there's always, we always have to be very careful to understand how Krishna's mercy is coming to us, and understand that in every situation, that I should patiently, very patiently, await Krishna's mercy. Because anukampa, because everything that Krishna does is his mercy. Even for the person who's approaching Krishna consciousness, they may not be getting this. What is the special characteristic of Krishna's mercy is that when a devotee becomes advanced, or when a devotee becomes a little more experienced in Krishna consciousness, then they have many good qualities. But they also may be lacking certain things. They may have certain remnants of material life. So Krishna just gives them just the right amount of difficulty or problems. Just the right amount, so that everyone they'll realize that this material world, it's not so nice. It's actually, what is the purpose of this world? It's a facility to regain our Krishna consciousness. Facility. Because when a devotee becomes mature, they understand that everything here is supposed to be offered to Krishna. And our duty is to take it back for Krishna as much as possible. Just like I remember when I first started preaching in Venezuela, and there's next country over is Guyana. Well, next country over on the east side. And there was like this little area that had like lines on, when I look at a map, this area, lines, and it was called Zona en Reclamación, reclaiming zone. Otherwise, both countries wanted that area, although it's jungle, but it has oil. Otherwise, they wouldn't care about it. Just some trees and monkeys, you know. But because it has oil, they both want it. You know. I don't know if they ever resolved that, but I haven't seen a map recently. But of course, in each country, they would each one would include it in their part. You know, Guyana would include that part in their map, and Venezuela would include that. But anyway, the point is, it was called the zone to be reclaimed. You know? So actually, the material world, the three. Although actually the material world never is out of Krishna's, you know, control. He leaves it. He gives it to his devotees so that they can reclaim it. You know? The materialistic people, they can try to enjoy it and say it's mine. And so he gives them the idea. You know, actually Krishna is the most wonderful governor, because most governments, whenever there's a rebellion, they put the rebellious people in prison and take away all their facilities. But Krishna gives the rebels facility. No. Otherwise, we're rebels, right? I mean, hopefully, we're not anymore. But we were rebels. We were rebelling against Krishna's supremacy, authority, that Krishna is the supreme Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, that he is the owner of everything, the proprietor of everything. So we rebel against that, but Krishna gives us the facility to rebel. Gives us material intelligence so that we can try to manipulate nature. Gives us power, money, you know, so that we can. You know, yeah. But then ultimately, he makes us realize it's mine. You know. As Srila Prabhupada said, death will come and knock on the door. And you can say, no, I'm sorry. I'm not, no. So you have to leave. No, I'm sorry. I can't. No. You may be able to do that with some landlord, but well, at least in this country, you can't so easily. They call the sheriff and they kick you out. But in everywhere else in the world, you can, very hard to kick people out. Once they're in, then you know, it takes years, maybe 10 years, 20 years to get them out. No. Very difficult. Okay. So this is more like Krishna's government here in the U.S. has authority, real authority. Have to stop at the stop sign. We were discussing that on the way here. Everywhere else you just kind of roll through. And, you know, as long as you don't hit anybody, it's okay. So, the point is that Krishna is giving us these difficulties. And you know, sometimes, especially in the beginning of devotional service, those difficulties they cause us anxiety, because those difficulties are we're used to trying to enjoy and happiness. And God means, as Srila Prabhupada says here in the purport, God means someone who gives you everything you want. And as long as we have that concept that God or good situation, what I can be thankful for, means that I get what I want, you know? And if that doesn't happen, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with Krishna? Just like in many religious conceptions in the world, the idea is that you know, God, I have to enjoy life because God put me here. I don't know why He did it, you know, put me here in all kinds of difficulties. So it's His job to get me out, you know? And in the meantime, because there's some prosperity and there's some facility, in the meantime, I should try to enjoy. You know, because you know, that's what God is for, to make me enjoy, to make me happy. You know. But they don't understand that when He gives us some difficulty, that is to make us happy. You know. And we have the primordial example of that in the fact that everybody has parents. You know. I mean, almost everybody. Everybody has them. Not everybody knows them. But most everybody does. And what do the parents do? When the child wants to do something that is not beneficial for themselves, even though they want to do it, then the parents, you know, some punishment, some restriction, some difficulty. The parents never want to restrict a child. They never want to harm the child in any way. But out of love, isn't that right? Huh? Okay. I think everybody had that experience at some point or another. Of course, sometimes people may be too harsh because they have no knowledge. Sometimes people may be too tolerant because they think, modern psychologists, you know, they say that just let them, you know, let them sprout however they be. Even though even a farmer doesn't do that. You know. Farmer, if some plant is growing improperly, they put a stick. You know, even with plants, you have some discipline. You know, what to speak of people. But some modern psychologists say, no discipline. Just be nice to them and they'll come out okay. So the point is that Krishna wants us to be happy, but he knows how we can be happy. Therefore, in this verse, it says, Pratiksha Maharaj says to Dharma, the bull, of course, what he says here is the result of Dharma saying that there is a supreme force. He doesn't say Krishna at this point, but there's a supreme force, a supreme governing principle, the supreme, that allots us different conditions of life. Therefore, why should I complain about it? Why should I try to identify what is the cause of what's happening to me? Because it must be just. Because I understand that the governing principle of this universe is supreme, supremely blissful, supremely just, supremely wonderful. Therefore, whatever's happening to me, it must serve that purpose. It must be to bring me to that point of perfection. And it must have a purpose. Therefore, I'm not going to blame it. I'm not going to blame this uneducated fool who's beating me. I'm not going to blame him because he's beating me for some purpose. Of course, we may not do that. You know, somebody comes up and starts beating us. We may not think, it's all karma. No. Actually, there was a conversation in the Mahabharata conversation where Prahlad Maharaj is asked that by Bali Maharaj. You know, he asked his grandfather that, What is it better to be tolerant, or is it better to be, very strict and stern? Which one is better? So Prahlad Maharaj says, actually, both things are necessary. Therefore, sometimes it says the spiritual master and the supreme lord are like a rose and a thunderbolt. Sometimes they're a rose; they prefer to be a rose, but sometimes they have to be a thunderbolt. And so. Because he said, if you're too tolerant, then all of your family members, friends, and everyone, and what to speak of servants, they'll take advantage of you. This is one of the main questions I get when we talk about tolerance. If I'm too tolerant, then people will just step on me. And there's some truth to that. But also, if you're too stern, then he says people will rebel against you. So, both elements have to be there. When should you be tolerant? You should be tolerant when the person has no knowledge that of what they're doing is actually improper. Or when a person does it, but there's some repentance there. Or when a person does something wrong, but their qualities don't allow them to fully understand the gravity. Then you should be tolerant. When should you not be tolerant? Or when people offend for the first time, then you should be tolerant. But when should you not be tolerant? When people, in spite of doing something wrong, they know it, but they claim that they are innocent. They claim that, I didn't do anything. Then you have to be stern. Also, if it's a second or more offense, then you have to be stern. So, point is that We tolerate. First thing a devotee does is tolerates. Tam titikshasva bharata. This is the first two lessons that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Is first of all that you must be humble. He says, ashochasanva shochatvam, that you're a fool. Understand that before the spiritual master, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said about what his spiritual master told him. And what Krishna is telling Arjuna, first you have to be humble. Understand that before me, the spiritual master, you should be consider yourself a fool and learn and imbibe Krishna consciousness. And the second lesson is tolerance. Tam titikshasva bharata. Humility and tolerance, these two things are essential for taking in, for being instructed in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult to progress. So to do that, to be humble and to be tolerant, you have to follow this principle. Because if our false ego is so active that every time something happens to us, we identify, the adi-daivik, the adi-bhautik, the adi-atmic cause. It was somebody else. My body is causing some problem. Okay, well, we try to cure the body, but at the same time, why is it causing me some problem? Because I did something in the past. Just like we were discussing this the other day about good diet, And, of course, devotees should try to have a good diet, healthy diet. Especially those of us who went through long periods of eating pakoras and everything soaked in ghee and we suffered for it. Many devotees go through that. Then you realize I have to have a sane diet. Of course, Srila Prabhupada said, in the beginning you cannot eat too much, and in the end you cannot eat too little. So this is kind of an ongoing principle. But the idea is that a devotee should be healthy, but ultimately, no matter how healthy you try to be, there's destiny. Just like one of our god sisters who left her body almost two years ago, about this time. She had a health clinic, colonics clinic, ate everything organic, and got cancer. So no matter what you do, as Prahlad Maharaj says, you may have the best doctor, but you still may get sick. You may have the best parents, but still some calamity may come. You may have the best boat like the Titanic or even better, but it can still sink. So he says, ultimately, what should I do? Just depend on Krishna. Not just depend, of course. Depending on Krishna means use our intelligence to maintain the body, the mind, everything in good condition. Use things properly. That's also Krishna. But we have to take that intelligence from Krishna. So instead of wasting our time defending our false ego, you did this, he did that, she did that, nature did this. Just like materialistic society, they're constantly in that mode of fighting against nature. Fighting against nature. These calamities are coming. Therefore, we will create a situation in the world that there will be no natural calamity. Just like I read this one article that they think they have this. They're developing a technique to be able to manipulate hurricanes. Otherwise, I forget what it is. Some sonic technique and dumping some things inside the hurricane, and then by some sonic technique they can redirect it. But then where do you send it? Let's send it to Venezuela because we don't like Chavez, or the other country, let's send it to the U.S. because they're too puffed up. Ultimately, where are you going to send it? So all these attempts to control nature, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, yayaram darate jagat, that we are trying to manipulate material nature, but actually material nature is manipulating us. And when one understands that aspect of nature causing these difficulties is another principle of the same principle that's being spoken of here. We should try to understand that when there's some difficulty, misery, economic difficulty, plague, whatever it may be, just like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he grew up, there was like three or four plagues he had to go through. And he accepted it as Krishna's mercy. His whole village was wiped out by one plague. And he accepted it as Krishna's mercy. So the point here is that Krishna's mercy is the main principle. Then there are some adjustments. Certainly there are some adjustments in the sense that, okay, Krishna's mercy can manifest by good intelligence of how to deal with the situation, reverse it, just like sickness. We don't just say, oh, it's Krishna's mercy, I'm sick, let me just die, that's also Krishna's mercy. No. We adjust. Krishna gives us the intelligence. He says, I am the healing herb. And ultimately, you're the cause of the sickness, and I'm the healing herb. That's the real message here. Whatever is happening to us, we're the cause, and Krishna is giving us the solution. How to rectify it. How even the idea of society. We're not fatalists in how to direct society. We are proactive. We're trying to come to the point where Varnashram, the whole world can be governed by Varnashram. Of course, first we have to govern ourselves by it. And then we can, sometimes we try to govern the world by Varnashram without subjecting ourselves to it. So, even the most advanced devotee, who is the most advanced devotee in the history of the universe? Anarpita Charim Chirat, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the role of a devotee, he himself followed Varnashram. Externally speaking, as far as society, as far as preaching to society, as far as dealing with society, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself followed it. But before Lord Jagannath, he said, no, I'm not a Brahmana. Before the Lord, there is no Varnashram. There is simply, we're all servants of Krishna. There's no differentiation. But to conduct society, then there's so much differentiation. We have Brahmanas, we have sannyasis, we have, chaste ladies, all these different positions, and according to our body and our circumstance we have to accept them. So all these different conditions are the opportunity to come closer to Krishna. This is what's being said here in this verse. Just to conclude, in Bhagavad Gita in the 10th chapter, verses 4 and 5, I can't remember all those two verses fully, but Krishna speaks of different qualities. He says, all these things are coming from me. All these things are being manifested. Some of them we appreciate. Knowledge, intelligence, equanimity. Some of these things are very relishable. But some of them, he says, even fearlessness and fear come from me. He says that success and failure come from me. All these things come from me. So ultimately, the point is that whether something is favorable for my sense gratification or something is unfavorable for my sense gratification, if something is favorable for my mental or intellectual conception or something is unfavorable for those things, it's coming from Krishna. And therefore, Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, very expertly, I really love those two verses, and I recommend everybody read them very deeply, and Srila Prabhupada's purport. Because he shows how you can take fear and convert fear into something positive for Krishna consciousness. How you can take happiness can be favorable, distress can be favorable, all those different things, success can be favorable, lack of success or failure can be favorable. A devotee can find a way to make everything very positive. And this is the essential message given in this verse here. That on this day of thanksgiving, we thank Krishna for everything that he's giving us. Of course, every day, like I said, every day is thanksgiving for us. Just thinking about that concept. Everything is favorable. Krishna is giving us so many things and everything is favorable. We just have to develop that spiritual intelligence to understand how to use all these different circumstances, situations, conditions of life in a way that will help us advance more and more in Krishna consciousness. Anyway, those are just some thoughts I had about this day and this verse. I'll stop here. Any questions? Yes.
We're talking about the duality, and we were out in Harinam once, and I started speaking with this lady, and we ended up having a conversation for about 15 minutes, and first she seemed very favorable. She was saying how she felt like she was a spiritual person, and but she didn't have any spiritual practice. And then I was just, you know, asking her different questions, what makes you happy? And she was saying, you know, nothing makes me happy. I'm just happy. It just comes from within. I don't need material things. I don't need my family. I don't need anything. I'm just happy. And she was, more and more the conversation went on, she started, like, discouraging me, first she seemed like she liked the devotee. She was very happy to see us, but towards the end of the conversation, she was like, you know, maybe you should do something else with your life. This is, you know, I would hate to be your mother, and like just telling me I should step away for some time. And she was saying, I was telling her how I'm happier, I'm healthier now, and I've lost my bad habits. And she was like, oh, well, I've never had bad habits. I've never needed any intoxication or needed any, you know. So I'm just.
What's the question? That's well, interesting. Interesting encounter. Otherwise, what do we say to someone like that, or how do we understand that? Well, different people are in different conditions of life. You know. Some people, due to pious activities, they may be in that situation. Just like one time, I was in Colombia giving a lecture to a group of people who really didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness. Very intelligent people, mostly coming from a pretty prosperous neighborhood and prosperous lifestyle. And so I spoke a little bit about difficulty and suffering, and one lady said, actually, I don't suffer. No, I'm not suffering. I don't really have any problems. And I said, yes, that may be. Although I said, I think if we sat down together and we analyzed, we would find many problems that you may be ignoring, because you're at this point in time, due to destiny, you're getting more material prosperity than material difficulty. And I said, then look at the rest of Colombia. Is everybody in that? Because I was talking about how being God conscious, we should, you know, accept that there are difficulties in life, there are problems in life. And so, you know, I told her that if you look at the whole body of society, you'll see that here in Colombia and most places in the world, there's more suffering and there's more difficulty than there is happiness. And of course, she started thinking about it. She said, well, maybe that's right. I said, I asked her, do you have a lock on your door? And she said, yes. I said, yeah, because you know that someone could break in, someone could rob you, someone could do so many things. So even though you have favorable material conditions, those favorable material conditions impose upon you a certain degree of anxiety. Because you have to protect. Whenever you have something, just like if you see a bum that's sleeping on the, you know, sidewalk or on a bench in the park, he's not so much anxiety about being robbed or, you know, what's going to happen in life, because, you know, but he still has his anxiety. I have to get up, I have to go out and beg on the corner and, you know, get some money for some more wine and whatever to eat. So whatever condition, actually the Avanti Brahmana, you know, when he was meditating after he had lost his wealth, because he was a very greedy agriculturalist and businessman, and he was so greedy and miserable and angry that all of his family, his friends, his servants, everybody went against him, and finally he lost everything. And then he realized that actually this wealth was the biggest cause of problems. It created 15 different types of problems. I can't remember them all, but like thievery, greed, anger, deception, lying, you know, intoxication, gambling, attachment to the opposite sex, you know, all, and just all these things. He said, actually, what's the use of this wealth? So unless we use it in Krishna consciousness, wealth, health, happiness, then ultimately they will result in anxiety. So that person was probably at a point in life or this particular life where they didn't have a whole lot of suffering. But then they create an artificial philosophy which is not sustainable. So, Prahlad Maharaj advises that one should not try, speaking about the quality, the Vaishnava quality of silence. A devotee is silent, and that quality of silence means that unless someone is willing to listen, there's no reason to speak. Otherwise, unless somebody's really interested in listening, at least to some degree, there's no reason to speak. Although Srila Prabhupada says sometimes devotees are so merciful that they will try to speak even when people don't want to listen. In the sense that, just like you said, we go on Harinam or some activity where we try to give Krishna consciousness to people, but just speaking, if you want to actually teach someone something, they have to be willing to learn. Just like we don't see the professors from the university just going downtown and calling everybody around, okay, now I'm going to instruct you on, such and such a subject matter. No. The students have to be interested. And the more qualified that someone is to speak, generally speaking, just like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was not so inclined to speak to people who had no intelligence to understand philosophy. Because, he was so brilliant that he felt that other devotees can do this. I can do Nam Bhajan. And when there's somebody that I can speak to, then I'll do it. But when they distributed prasadam, he would be the first one to go out and serve prasadam to thousands of people in some festival or something. He wasn't lacking humility, but he was being intelligent. I have this ability to speak to people. Let me speak to those people that I can use my ability to. So sometimes we meet people like that. And Krishna sends them also just to make us a little humble. Not to think that, I can answer anybody's question. I can defeat anybody's argument. Just like Srila Prabhupada and Professor Stahl. Srila Prabhupada gave such perfect arguments, but he was so puffed up that he would always come back and give some Vedic reference. And finally, Prabhupada said, let's let Mahaprabhu be the judge. Let's see what happens to Professor Stahl after he gives up his body. Let's see what happens to Srila Prabhupada. It's like I was, just to conclude, one time I was speaking to one professor in Dallas, and he was, because he was studying Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, so he had all these arguments. And then finally, I saw him sitting there, and his hand was shaking with a cigarette in it. And I said, You've heard all this wonderful philosophy. Do you like it? Oh, yes, it's very nice. So then why, you're smoking and you can't even stop your hand from shaking? I said, what's the use of studying so much philosophy if you can't apply it in your life? And he said, no, you're right. You're right. He put out a cigarette. At least saved me a little, saved my lungs a little bit. The point is sometimes Krishna sends someone just to make us humble and understand that I'm not the doer, I'm not the controller, I'm not the one who creates the result. So we have to tolerate it. And give them prasadam. Sometimes people would argue with Srila Prabhupada, professor, the Prabhupada would argue, give such wonderful points, but either they were too dull to catch it or they just were too proud to accept prasadam. So Prabhupada would say, bring prasadam. That everybody got. Actually, there was one man, this is such a funny thing. One man, he was like dressed up in a really nice suit and everything, really proud. So after that, he spoke nicely to Prabhupada. He was a little reluctant, So Prabhupada told him to bring prasadam. So what did they bring? They brought gulab jamun. So, he didn't know how to take it. So Prabhupada told the devotee, he didn't know what to do with it, because he is very, you could see someone who's used to eating with knife and fork, and maybe 20 different types of forks and 15 spoons. So Prabhupada told the devotee, you can show him. So the devotee took the glove jamun and went, like that. So the man took the glove jam and picked it up. And when he picked it up, all the juice ran down his sleeve, you know, got it all wet with sugar water. And he's going like, finally just goes like this, and it squirts out, you know, all over his shirt, suit. And then he, you know, like the devotees were thinking, oh no, you know, he's going to go away and never come back then. But he took it, and his eyes lit up. He said, do you have another one? And he took like 3 or 4 glove jam, all his arm wet with sugar water. So sometimes prasadam does miracles, as this yatra here of Gainesville is a testimony of the power of prasadam. Any other question?
But I'm already happy. I don't need all of that. I'm better than you in
mm-hmm,
a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what she was saying. Definitely. She was not ready to listen. She was ready to speak. Generally speaking, in the material world, even in the most sophisticated circles, people tolerate the other person speaking so they can finally enlighten the other one. You know, like just politely tolerate it. And so I can give the real conclusion. Yeah.
My profession, I always say, I'll ask people, what's the opposite of speaking? I said, listen, really? Actually, my observation is the opposite of speaking is waiting to speak.
Yeah. Very good.
From Krishna, we understand how difficult it is as a grace from Krishna, and then it's kind of like you have to shift your gear from blaming everyone else in your life and then to being appreciative. So, like, how exactly do we bring that? We grasp it philosophically and intellectually, and then so initially in the beginning there is so much endeavor because we are thinking, oh, this is responsible, and so we should just change the whole situation. There's so much endeavor. And then there is a philosophy that Krishna is doing all this and there is purification needed. That's why Krishna is arranging all this. So how do we take this at the same time, like have the there is a difficulty we have to change. We have to do something.
Well, first of all, as I just quoted one verse, first thing we have to understand that Krishna is not creating the difficulty. It's Atmakrita. No, I created. No. I created the difficulty. Krishna is dishing it out. The medicine, just like if a doctor doesn't create, you know, the disease, he gives you the medicine. So Krishna sometimes uses difficulty. But first of all, we have to understand that when we're in neophyte stage, it's not Krishna may not be personally acting. This is another aspect of our false ego, to think that me as a neophyte devotee, that Krishna is personally interacting in my life. No, he creates a mechanism where when we come to devotional service, through the mercy of his devotees, through the pangs of material existence, by giving us the intelligence through philosophy, we can understand these things are happening. And then, as Srila Prabhupada says in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, when does Krishna actually become personally, you know, involved in our life? When one cries out to Krishna like a child crying out to his mother, then Krishna, personal intervention. But, you know, we learn from the acharyas, it's not that, you know, we always pray to Krishna, certainly, and Krishna listens when we pray, but if the prayer is not in that mood, if the prayer is a negotiation, you know, like, well, Krishna, you know, okay, you got me this time, but, you know, so please get me out of the situation. But then I'm really not willing to establish a higher degree of surrender. Then we'll still be within the mechanism that Krishna has created. You know, and we have to, you know, manifest the solution from what Krishna has given, and from what Krishna has given his devotees. You know, as Srila Narottam Das Thakur says, Hari Guru Vaishnava Bhagavata Gita. Krishna is speaking, in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, Guru Vaishnava and the Bhagavatam itself and the Gita itself. So these five sources of inspiration, that is how Krishna is rectifying us, or giving us the difficulty, so to speak. He's giving us the solution at the same time. But Krishna personally intervenes really in a devotee's life when they surrender to him. If they're not surrendered, then his intervention will be mechanical, will be in the mechanisms that he's given us. Because if we think that Krishna is always just right there personally, then some things that happen may bewilder us. Why would Krishna do this? When I'm already engaged in devotional service, we don't understand that there's a mechanism there. And that some things, even after being in Krishna consciousness for a long time, some very heavy and tragic things may happen, from a material point of view in our lives. And that's just the mechanism, the remnants of material existence coming out. Of course, Krishna, when a devotee is surrendered, Krishna measures it in such a way that it will never be too difficult. It will never be impossible for a devotee to manage. But sometimes when we're very neophyte, we have to take help from others, even physical, psychological. We have to take help because although the lesson is not impossible for us to assimilate, we are not, we're not responding to the help that Krishna is giving us. We're not able to respond fully. So we have to take some extra help. There's nothing wrong with that either. Well, that's what Srila Prabhupada explains here, that there was no reason for him to suffer. There was no reason for Srila Prabhupada to suffer so many reverses. There was no reason for Haridas Thakur to be tortured. There was no reason for Prahlad Maharaj to be tortured. And that is to help people understand how one can maintain a perfect degree of Krishna consciousness and remain happy even in the presence of reverses. The only purpose for a pure devotee to suffer that way is as an example. And a devotee is happy to do it because they do it out of compassion for others. Of course, sometimes a devotee takes it because a devotee is naturally humble. A devotee takes it that Krishna is just bringing me closer to Him. Krishna is being merciful to me. Krishna is correcting me. Krishna is rectifying me. But of course, we know in those cases that it's just Krishna is making an example of them so that their tolerance, their compassion, their magnanimity will inspire us to pull ourselves through those difficult times. When we're not able to psychologically adjust ourselves to the imminent problems that may be manifesting. Okay.
How about Jesus? I got instruction about Jesus and the issue of Krishna and God and Jesus, Krishna, Jesus is the son of Krishna.
Jesus is the son of Krishna?
Yes.
Well, he says he's the son of God. If Krishna is God, he must be God's son, Krishna's son, right? If Krishna is God, and Jesus said, I'm the son of God, then he must be Krishna's son. Of course, he also says, everyone is a son of God. He says that we are all sons that come out from the house of God. So, he's actually says that we're not only him, but all of us are sons of God. And Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita also, that I am the seed producing father. He's just one of the main sons, teaching us how we should also be the son of God.
I got instruction. While our Bible say we should eat meat, not just Krishna say don't eat meat. So what is right? Don't eat meat or eat meat?
So, who's saying that? Krishna says we shouldn't, right?
Yes, but the Bible says you should eat.
No, it doesn't say you should. It never says you should. Never says. Some people interpret it that it's all right to do so, but it doesn't say. Actually, there are many passages in Romans and different places where it says that it's not advised to do so. No. It's just, it's vague. It's not clear. It's not clear. So therefore people interpret it. And not only do they interpret the Bible, people interpret Bhagavad Gita, people interpret Bhagavatam, people interpret any scripture. Generally our tendency is, bring the scripture down to my level. Bring God, make God fit into my conception of what he is. You know, instead of expanding my consciousness to try to, as far as possible, understand God, let me encapsulate God into my limited intelligence, no. Or let me make the scripture be favorable to my sense gratification. I mean, especially with beta base, that's more possible. You can look up something and then find out all the things that make it, you know, make it justifiable what I want to do, what I want to eat, how I want to behave. No. Before you had to read all the books, but now you just go in there and. Yeah. I mean, there are many advantages to the beta base, but that's one of the disadvantages. That people can look things up very quickly, so they don't take the time to read the whole Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, all of our books. Because you could just look something up. You know. Just like when we were young, right? We had to add and subtract and multiply and divide all in our heads. And then I remember we got the slide rule. It was like, wow, slide rule. You know, I can do this trigonometrical calculation with this little slide rule. And then came the calculator. And I saw that people, you know, they didn't know the multiplication tables to the same degree. They just put in the numbers and get the answer. So that tendency is there. Become mentally and intellectually lazy. So we have to read all these books of Srila Prabhupada very carefully. So I think for time we should stop here. I thank you all again for your kind attention, for tolerating me, having me here. You know, we spoke about tolerance, so I gave you a practical opportunity. You know. And thank Kalakanta Prabhu very much for inviting me and for his wonderful service here and for taking care of all of you. He's a very wonderful, accomplished Vaishnava, and I'm very happy to get the limited association that I have throughout the years. And of course it's been more limited lately, but that's probably due to my misdeeds. No, you're not going to the GBC meeting.
Thank you very much, Guru Prasad Maharaj. And I'd just like to announce Maharaj will be speaking Friday night. Tomorrow night. You know, the student crowd might be a little limited, but it will be here 7 o'clock, right? 7 o'clock. Okay, thank you very much for coming.